freedom and let me take you down.
I'm like really overdoing Jessie J singing.
Yeah. Well, that's something you and her have in common.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So on with the George Michael episode.
Yeah, now that we've done it, is that our intro?
Sure.
Cool.
We're making fun of Jessie J. And no one will understand why either.
You know what? That's what you just have to deal with.
Just add her to the list of artists that's going to sue us.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
you know,
we lost the great George Michael at the end of last year, which is just awful. And George was he's somebody that we've loved our entire lives.
Yes.
I think he was one of the first tapes I ever had. I'm pretty sure.
Well, like I have, and I've talked about this on the show. I have like a very big emotional connection to the music my mom had because she would have, and she had like three cassette tapes, and me and my little cousins would just hang out with them in the late 80s. One was Milli Vanilli, Girl You Know It's True, Def Leppard, whatever that album is with all the Def Leppard stuff. And then I always forget the name of it.
Well, didn't they have a few?
No, but like the one with like Pour Some Sugar on Me, like the big one.
Pyromania was one of their albums. I don't know the discography.
I think that might be earlier. I can never remember.
Yeah, there's an earlier. It tricks you out because there's one that's too early that was not Pour Some Sugar on Me. Because Pour Some Sugar on Me was like way later than you think it was.
Yes, it was.
It was like way later than you think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, Def Leppard, and then George Michael's Face, because my mama loved me. She loved her some George Michael. She was actually telling me probably a couple weeks before he died, like we were talking about George Michael for whatever reason, and she was like very upset still that he was gay. Like she had no idea. And so then I was like, Mom.
The plight of the heterosexual middle-aged white woman.
Yeah, and I remember like we would listen to that tape so much. It was a white cassette tape.
Mm-hmm.
And it always made me uncomfortable because I was probably like 3 or 4 when we would listen to it. And I would see I Want Your Sex on it. And I like didn't know what it meant, but I knew it was like, we can't talk about this.
I had the same issue with my mom. She bought me the tape in a thrift store when I was like 10. Because it's just like way after that album came out and George Michael was like not cool anymore. But yeah, she was like looking at the tape. She was like, I want your sex. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
It was, I was like, it's fine, Mom. It's about monogamy. He writes it on the woman in the video with lipstick.
That's exactly fine. How it works. Yeah.
So we kind of wanted to figure out a way we could do an offbeat George Michael episode. Because we were like, well, it's not really offbeat to sit here and talk about all of his hits and everything. I mean, everybody knows his hits.
And like
they
I
love
said
his hits.
With you before, it would be a 6-hour episode.
It would be a 6-hour episode because he had a lot of hits.
Yeah.
So what we decided to do instead was just kind of go through and each pick a handful of our favorite offbeat George / Wham songs. Stuff that even if maybe it was released as a single at the time, like it's not something you hear on the radio now or hear people talk about now. Kind of some of the stuff that time forgot and some stuff that just was never a single that was just album cuts that we liked. You want to go first there, Batter?
Yeah, I'll go first. My first on there is, this was a single, but it wasn't really very huge.
This was
a
single?
It was a single. It was actually pretty big in the UK. I have a good story about it. Club Tropicana.
And this is a Wham song, yeah.
This is the first album Wham. This is very retro Wham, and it is ridiculous. The video is unbelievably ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's almost like, imagine George Michael trying to tongue-in-cheek make fun of Barry Manilow to try to dick swing a little bit and say that he's cooler than Barry Manilow, because that's kind of like what I felt like this was. It was sort of like a middle finger slash sort of a tribute to like 70s, like, you know, yacht rock. I mean, not yacht rock. You know the sound I'm talking about.
Oh,
the
I
Barry
know exactly
Manilow, the Copacabana, that post Ricky Ricardo weird stuff.
And what I love about early Wham, this song, and of course I'm not going to give yours away, but also your first song on your list.
Uh-huh.
Spoiler, I've seen it. But it's kind of this like free, this very free kind of like, I know that you want me to work, but I'm not going to. Everything is fun. We're just having fun. And it's like this very weird kind of like anti-political thing of like, this is what we're doing in our generation. We're just going to party at Club Tropicana. Drinks are free. And I love that about early Wham. It's so beautiful and carefree. And also I have a funny story about the British Army.
Oh, my God. This is a lot to take. Go on.
I have a funny story about the British Army. When I was in Paris, I had a friend who was British living in Paris for work. Didn't speak a lick of French and didn't care to. Anyway, he was in the British Army back like during right before Afghanistan, actually. And that was back before they had a lot of work to do. So they would just basically just all party in the middle of the desert. And one of their favorite songs to party to and just get massively drunk and dance around was Club Tropicana. And he was like, yeah, that's just what we would do. And I was, this
British
is like,
soldiers in 2002-ish?
Like, yeah, 2001, 2002.
Were like jamming to a song that was almost 20 years old at that point and was totally lame when it came out.
Yeah. And that's so amazing. I'd heard this story in like 2006 and I was like, this is back before like you could have kind of gay stuff in the army. Like you had to be very manly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and he told me the story like it was totally normal. And that's what everyone did. And I was like, I mean, do you not, are you not self-aware about this at all? That Club Tropicana is like the gayest thing maybe?
Yeah, it's pretty gay.
Like it sounds like a gay island.
I feel like we get into a lot of judgment out here about how gay things are.
Because a lot of stuff was gay. But yeah. This is back in the time
when...
we like
a lot of gay things.
This might come up a lot in the show about how, like, a lot of stuff in the early 80s, late 70s, for example, were very, very gay. You just couldn't call them gay.
That's
everyone
true.
Loved them. You just couldn't call them gay.
That's right. Because we were still living in Reagan's homophobic America.
Yeah. Like, my mom had no idea.
Yes. We had to keep people like your mom very happy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of what Club Tropicana is for me.
Super gay.
And it's amazing.
Let me take you to the place where membership's a smiling face. Put shoulders with the stars. Where strangers take you by the hand and welcome you to Wonderland. From beneath their Panamas. Club Tropicana drinks are free. Fun and sunshine. There's enough for everyone.
I wanted to talk about Wham Rap because I only know about this. I was never like, I think I might own a copy of Make It Big, but I've like Wham's stuff has never really been for me. It's just, it's a little too soft for me.
What?
Yeah.
It goes hard.
I know I know the Wham Rap because it was on the soundtrack to the movie Perfect, which is an excellent soundtrack. And yeah, it's just,
its legacy outlives that actual movie.
That's so true.
It's pop culture legacy.
It's true. If you've never seen Perfect, by the way, it's this movie starring Jamie Lee Curtis and John Travolta, and he plays a Rolling Stone reporter who is interested in like aerobics class culture and how it's affecting like, you know, its correlation with music at the time. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very like early to mid 80s idea. And so, of course, he ends up having an affair with her. But there are these ridiculous scenes in the movie of, like, these aerobics classes, including one famous one where he goes to her class for the first time. And they are dancing to a song called Shock Me, which is sung. It's a duet by, I think it's Jesse Johnson and Whitney Houston, which is, like, the weirdest pairing. But they're doing this, like, sensual eye thing. And, like, she's, like, air humping and he's, like, air humping back. It's just...
It's inspiration for the Call on Me video.
Yes,
which
exactly.
Which I didn't realize until I was watching Perfect on, like, Showtime.
If you're familiar with the Eric Prydz song Call on Me, which had a very hot video that came out around 2004. That was what they were throwing back to. And I did not know until years later when I saw Perfect either.
Me too.
I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. But yeah, the Wham Rap is on that soundtrack.
It's the first Wham single.
Really?
Yeah, it was their first single. It didn't make it very big.
It does kind of stick out like a sore thumb on that soundtrack because the rest is kind of that like very 80s aerobics, flash dance, sweating, high energy kind of music. So then you have this weird British white boy hip hop thing.
It's kind of uncomfortable to listen to now.
Can you call the song hip hop?
It's not at all. I mean, this comes out in 81, for example.
Right. I mean,
so
people didn't. Rap was still kind of getting its feet at that time, you know?
And not in the mainstream, especially not in the British mainstream.
Right. So it was easy for them to just sort of talk over a very up-tempo song and be like, this is a rap. And, you know, real rappers are probably going, yeah, fuck you. No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense when you listen to it. If you don't know it already and you listen to it now, it's going to sound weird. Like, you know,
right.
The first lyrics are, hey, everybody take a look at me. I've got street credibility. And it's
it's just because everybody with street cred definitely finishes the word credibility.
No, right?
Although I don't know. I think spelling or using the entire word credibility to just for the sake of a rhyme, that is kind of street cred-esque. So
yeah, I mean,
I'll give him that.
Very early rap, and it's
well, what
a
you
lot.
Said is so perfect. It's very much I'm going to do what I want.
Exactly.
It's expressing who you are, and this is who I. Yeah, I mean, that's
hey,
that's kind of what George was always
work.
About.
Oh, I love that lyric. Yeah. Hey, jerk, you work.
I ain't never gonna work. Get down in the dirt. I choose to cruise. Gonna live my life sharp as a knife. I found my groove, and I just can't lose.
because I'm keeping mine chronologically in order, not necessarily by favorites. My favorite is coming next because it's another Wham. This was not a single, but
this is your favorite?
This current favorite. What?
This is your favorite? The one you're
the one I'm about to say. Okay. Yeah, it's my favorite and I love it. It's called Battle Stations.
Yeah.
And it's Wham after Make It Big and they were huge and George Michael's like, I'm doing this solo. Like Andrew Ridgeley is basically pointless. It's fine. Yep. They come out with this what is called Wham, like the final album, which right. also has a cut of like called Music from the Edge of Heaven. It's got a couple weird cuts, but Wham, the final. And one of the songs on it that was not released as a single was Battle Stations. And it's, if you love synth bass,
oh my
like
God.
We do on Offbeat Tracks.
Yes.
This is part of your Bible.
The synth bass podcast.
Yes.
Pretty much.
This Battle Stations is pretty amazing for that because it doesn't go a lot of places, but it's just this constant beat that's super. It just drones
on. The beat
on.
Is very
it's
electro
sexy.
To me.
It's different from the rest of
it. It recalls electro music big time because this is like this. What year was this? 84, 85?
86.
Okay. So electro music was very much already a thing then because electro kind of sprung up around 1982, 83. So again, and one of these things that had been hot for a few years in the club. And yeah, this was kind of like Wham giving a shot at an electro track.
Yeah, it's very
but it
different.
Kinda worked.
It's very different to me from the rest of Wham because Wham has this beautiful like kind of retro early 60s kind of beat. Like the beats are very fast and it's that beautiful kind of 60s pop kind of sound.
Yes, it's
this
soft.
Is not that.
Earlier when I said soft, that's what I meant.
But it goes hard.
Okay.
I don't want you to call Wham soft.
It's soft and nerdy.
Yeah, but
that's
mean,
okay.
Just,
there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just
like,
saying.
Yeah, like there's that
it's not
beautiful...
make Wham into things that they aren't.
Wham is legendary. I don't like to have Wham distaste anywhere near me. But
No distaste. Just honoring their legacy.
That is true. Anyway, you've got like that kind of pop that dun, 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 like the freedom that you've got that kind of beat. Mm-hmm. Battle Stations is completely different.
Totally.
Completely. And it's a whole new Wham that you've never heard if you've never heard.
But they still keep their signature harmonies. The harmonies were kind of part of Wham and there are some great harmonies in this track.
Yeah. And it's a great song about when your love kind of dies a little bit and you're not doing it as much as you were before. Mm-hmm. Just on Wednesdays, it's kind of like Flight of the Conchords, that one song, Business Time. George Michael here is only doing his chick on Wednesdays. And he's like, it's Saturday. I want to. Yeah, that's true. The chick is. Max just did a chick thing, but.
Yeah.
He was.
Wait, what?
Excuse me. He was bisexual back then.
Just said Max did a chick thing. I held air quotes and said the word chick.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I meant. But they only do it on Wednesdays and it's Saturday and he's calling her and her voicemail picks up and it totally makes George Michael snap. And he's like, look, bitch. Kind of. He does say bullshit in the song, which I
Yeah,
enjoy.
He does.
Yeah, he does say bullshit. He's had it. But yeah, I love Battle Stations. I never get over it. It's so good.
You lost too much.
I wanted to talk about the song Hard Day, which is from the Faith album.
Yes.
Allegedly, this was released as a single. I cannot find that it charted anywhere.
I didn't think that it was.
It allegedly was a single indeed from this album, but it looks like
maybe
it did
in
not
like
chart.
Hungary.
It looks like it did not chart in any country, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. So Hard Day it's a very down-tempo kind of, you know, I mean, it's still electronic. It's still George.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of electronics happening here, but it's down-tempo. I wanted to bring this song because I feel like this was the first possible hint at his gayness in any sort of direct way, this song. I mean, there's a lyric in the song that says, sweet little boy with oh such a big mouth, harsh words can get you into hot water.
Yeah, I never noticed that. Yeah. That's probably...
When people don't understand you, baby, I'm always here for you. I mean, it's right there. So I felt like that was kind of a landmark and worth mentioning. Plus, it's a great song.
That's very true. Yeah, I never really thought of it that way. You're decoding the gayness of George Michael, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
You can move your mouth forever, but the words sound just the same.
My third is also a deep cut. This was definitely not a single.
And another a down-tempo jam also.
I love this. It's so soulful. Like, it's beautiful. It's like the beautiful George Michael soul voice. A Last Request, parentheses, I Want Your Sex. Just in case you haven't had enough wanting of sex in album, you're going to go to the last track. He still wants your sex.
That's right.
Last Request, this is a song where basically he's going to get somebody drunk. So it's a little weird. It's a little weird, but you suspend your disbelief. He means it romantically and with consent.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yeah. He already wrote monogamy on there in lipstick. How could he mean any harm?
That's true. That's very true. So he's just saying, you should sleep with me tonight and wait for that gin and tonic to get to your head.
We should note that this version, by the way, is not on the original release. It was only on
it was only on
the cassette version of the album. And I think it was on the CD version when it was released. I mean, I don't see why they would have left it off.
What, wasn't on the vinyl?
No, it was not on the vinyl, on the original release, no. It was on my tape, though.
It was on my tape, too.
That was why I knew it. That's why we knew it, because we had it on tape. We're too young for vinyl to have really kind of been like our thing that we went to listen to.
Yeah, by the time we grew up, late 80s, cassette players were pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we're both kind of children of the 90s, so it was all about the cassettes when I was a kid.
Yes, me too.
I do want to say also about this song, I don't know... I know you're familiar with the song Sexual Healing. It reminded me of the song Sexual Healing meets the song When We Kiss by Bardot. I don't know if you're familiar with that song.
Yes.
But it's like if you fuse those two into one song, then you get this song.
I'll accept that. That's pretty good.
It's late. Time for bed.
In July of 1992, there was an album released called Red Hot and Dance. I only knew about this because it was one of the hundreds of CDs that we had around when I used to work at a stereo store in high school. And I don't know how a copy of it ended up there, but it was like the only thing that had any kind of remotely cool music on it. So I would use it frequently when testing things. It was produced and released by an organization called the Red Hot Organization, which was an HIV/AIDS advocacy organization. So they got prominent artists, mostly I think a lot of gay artists or gay-friendly artists, to come be on this record. And George has a few songs on it, but the one that always stuck with me was Too Funky. Too Funky was released as a single, but this is sort of like George kind of coming into his gayness.
Yeah.
Because this is like, he was kind of out by then. It was because the album before this was 1990. This was 92. So it was kind of in that little window that he sort of finally embraced
gayness. He wasn't fully out, but it was kind of one of those like secrets, open secrets in a way. It wasn't really a secret.
Yeah, I mean.
He had said that he was bi.
His image was pretty gay by this point.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I like Too Funky, because I kind of take Too Funky as his coming out song.
Okay.
And it's a very like gay 90s sound. Like this is gay 90s club music big time.
It very much is.
Just like that kind of house beat, baby.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
It's a very big progression from before George.
So, speaking of gayness,
this is, to me, the official coming out song.
Yeah.
What I love about, so we're in 1998, and I thought about this. So, like, at this point, we're youngsters who are aware of things that are going on. We're old enough to understand things that are happening. So,
yes.
I'm 13 in 1998. And
I was 12, yes.
Yeah. What a golden age of sex scandals.
Yeah, no.
Like, when you think about
it. No kidding.
Like, no wonder we don't care about anything
as
adults. We're like, who cares? Bill Clinton,
right.
Monica Lewinsky.
I literally learned what the term oral sex meant
Me
because of the president of the United States.
Me too. It was very weird. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Right-wing conspiracy. Loved it. And George Michael getting caught doing it in a bathroom.
Exactly.
Which...
With a cop.
Yeah, with a whale.
I guess he propositioned a cop.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's just entrapment. Come on, why cop. Would he do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, really. Just shut up,
just
cop.
Just say that you wanted to bang
hook
George
up with
Michael.
George Michael and then move on with your life.
Yeah. Like
you got a story.
Maybe write a book about it later.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
You could have. This could have been your year, cop. You could have waited till now. You could have written an amazing book. Hell, like, you could have come out after. We could have waited till George already came out, and then you could have done a reality show together. We're rewriting this idiot cop's life for him. God.
Anyway, George Michael gets caught doing it in a bathroom and ends up basically having to come out because it's this whole big thing like, oh my God, George Michael's gay. Huh? Like, come on. And it's a whole big like fake scandal, but he has to go on like Barbara Walters and be like, yeah, I'm totally a gay dude. And later on in the year, releases one of my favorite songs that I swear I remember as being a huge hit, but apparently it wasn't. It was to me, I guess. I just loved this so much. Outside.
Yeah, it was called Outside.
And it totally lampoons the whole rest.
I knew.
It's so good.
I knew when I saw this on your list, I knew what song it was. And I had not heard it since I was a kid. I don't even think I'd ever listened to it all the way through. But I was going, I'll bet this is the one where he did the music video with the disco ball urinals.
Oh, yeah.
And I was right.
And I loved it. And I loved the songs. It was one of the first songs in high school when I got like LimeWire or Napster or whatever.
Yeah.
That I downloaded it.
This is
so good.
Again, this is George definitely staying with the progression of gay music. This was like, you know, that progressive house, that late 90s progressive house sound. And there are even some versions of this song where he puts in like news reports of his arrest.
Yeah, it's in there. There's like a little thing on the radio about it. It's totally funny. Lampooning that whole thing. He's basically, this is him finally saying like, look, this is who I am. I did this.
Right.
This is me from now on.
What a great way to own a scandal. I mean, this is like textbook. This is how you own a scandal.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm trying to remember back to when did anyone like hate him for that scandal?
No, it was just funny. It was a punchline for morning shock jock radio.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that, you know, it's still kind of a little bit taboo to be gay in 98.
Yes.
I think it was more taboo to talk about it rather than actually be it. Like, you know, people who were gay, they just didn't talk about it.
It's true.
But I think it was more just like he's finally having to say, you know what? This is it. And here's Outside, the best song ever.
That's right. I think I'm done with the hall. I think I'm done with the kitchen table. Let's go outside. Same era as Outside, I wanted to talk about Fast Love, because this was like the last one I remember seeing the music video and being somewhat of some semblance of a hit. Which is weird because nobody seems to remember this song. But
I actually forgot about this song.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too
you
funny.
Forgot about Outside. I forgot about Fast Love.
This was like top 10.
I know.
You know? Gotta get up to get down. Mm-hmm. You gotta get up to get... Like, oh God, what a great hook. What a great hook.
Very good.
Yeah, this was a jam, man. This was just a jam.
Yeah, it's beautiful, like mid-90s dance jam.
But why does nobody remember it?
I don't know. We're changing that on Offbeat Tracks. You're going to remember it now.
That's right.
My last one is from 2004, which I think is a beautiful heyday of dance music, modern dance music anyway. I love 2004, 2003. Like 2003 to 2006 to me is like the time when I actually cared about pop music in the way that, not like the Hot 100, but like actual dance music and what was happening on the scene. So here comes George Michael. He's got his own coming out. Flawless, Go to the City, which is that beautiful sound of 2004. Like, do you remember this song?
I did not, but here's the thing. It's funny that you say that. I got a couple notes on what you just said. So I think that music of, I associate music with like dance music from 2003 to 2006, they already mentioned. I associate it with a very, very specific sound.
Okay.
And a lot of it, I think, sounded alike because like progressive trance was really, that was like the big thing then, and progressive house. And so I don't think there was a whole hell of a lot of creativity, but there were songs that stuck out and stuck with you for some reason. So I wasn't even thinking like, okay, Flawless. I didn't know this song. I had to look this up. But he samples a song that I really love from that era and like loved then, which was the song Flawless by a group called The Ones.
Yep.
Which was a big house hit at the time. And I like I remember liking that song like when it was out. And I that was when I was kind of first getting into dance music of the time. So I was very surprised to hear this. So why, but why this though? Cause it essentially is just the song by The Ones, but with George Michael adding lyrics.
I just loved it. Okay. I loved it better than the other one. No, there's a, that's a, another
he,
thing.
I mean, he did, he added lyrics that are kind of like empowering, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, this was actually surprisingly a huge hit in the US of all places of that kind of like era of
on
music.
The dance charts.
Yeah. It was like number one on the club. It was huge in ways that it wasn't in Europe where all of that music was really huge on the actual pop charts.
Interesting.
Yeah. In the US, this was a huge club hit. I don't know. Like, a lot of that era of dance music harkens back to old music. Older, anyway.
Like disco, like, you mean?
There's disco. There's a lot of 80s stuff. I mean, there's you've got, like, a lot of mashups that become big. A lot of remixes.
That's really interesting that
there's,
you say
like,
that.
Deep Dish did that a lot. Deep Dish was huge back then. I remember Deep Dish. Deep Dish did a ton of that. Money for Nothing.
See, I always associate, that's funny that you say that because I associate that specific era in dance music with an outright like rejection of 80s music.
No, I don't think so.
Because
I think
they were trying to totally distance themselves from like the high energy sound and like the TR-808 sounds. And they were very much like, they were kind of even starting to shed the TR-909, which was so big in the 90s. Those are two drum machines, by the way, if you don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Just like Google TR-808 and TR-909, and there are videos you can find on YouTube that will show you songs you've heard that have
every time Max sends me one, I want to buy a drum machine for no reason.
If I had $3,500 to be a TR-808 sitting on this on this table right now, but I see that era as a rejection of that kind of music and an attempt to go someplace totally different, which is why trance got big and
way.
Like
I mean there are
garage music got really big in the UK at that time. Like it was stuff that had not been done before.
I mean I think that there was. Definitely,
it all ended up running together.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff on the charts was definitely that, and a lot of it was really terrible. But I think a lot of the dance stuff, a lot of the bigger dance songs that really crossed into like mainstream pop, like a lot of the Deep Dish stuff, like they took a song off the Flashdance soundtrack and like made it their own. They did Money for Nothing.
Interesting.
Stevie Nicks. They did a Stevie Nicks remix that was pretty huge that I listened to a lot, actually. I mean, there was a lot of that stuff, like the whole Call on Me thing, like taking Valerie. They were taking a lot of that sound and a lot of that image. That wasn't, I mean, the stuff that really made it big on the charts from that dance era was really just calling back to those old things.
But see, I see Eric Prydz and all that kind of stuff and as
Eric Prydz later changed a little bit.
Yeah, but I see all of that as a different. I think that was a very specific. It was like a splinter cell almost.
It was.
Like within that community. Because.
But that was the stuff that was crossing over
this,
into the mainstream.
The stuff that sounded like this George Michael song, this Flawless song. Like that to me is when I think of that era of dance music, I think like this Flawless song, which to me does not sound like Eric Prydz. I think that Eric Prydz was doing something different.
No, they were. It's interesting that you were. No, and I mean, this is. It still plays in the club with those other songs. I still think it fits. But that whole stuff with like Eric Prydz and Deep Dish and that whole era, Benny Benassi actually came from that. Benny Benassi, all of that was stuff that basically just sounds like old music. And that's what George Michael does. And George Michael, I think, transcends that too because he's George Michael. He's
indeed
got that beautiful voice and he can do a dance song and have it be accessible to everyone. It's beautiful.
Waiting, flawless. Waiting, flawless. And it's no good, and it's no good. Waiting, you got to go to the city. Always the same, flawless. Always the same, always the same, always the same. 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 Always
One last song I wanted to talk about. This was the first George Michael song I ever heard. It was one of the first songs I ever remember loving as a small child. It's his duet with Aretha Franklin, I Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
It's really funny.
What's that?
I never really liked this song.
Really?
All George Michael songs. There are two George Michael songs that I never really cared for. One is I Knew You Were Waiting For Me, like it's fine. And One More Try.
Oh, yeah. Well, One More Try is kind of...
Everyone loves One More Try.
Yeah, apparently. I don't get that.
I didn't find that out till he died. Everyone's like, oh, One More Try. I'm like, really?
Yeah, but that was just a big show. They all like his voice in that one.
I mean, it's nice, I guess.
But I Knew You Were Waiting For Me is definitely one of the first songs I remember loving as a small child. It is a beautiful duet. His voice with Aretha Franklin's, it was just this really cool, like, clashing of generations of music. And it just worked, man. It worked. And nobody seems to remember this song. Like, everybody knows Aretha Franklin. Everybody knows George Michael. But nobody seems to remember this duet. Like, if you ask the average person.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I hear it all the time.
People our age, I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know this song.
I was crippled emotionally.
That's our little romp through some of our favorite offbeat George Michael tracks.
You remember when I got my Nixon tattoo, when I told you my original tattoo idea, which was the George Michael monogamy across the back?
Yes.
Do I have to get it now? He died a week later.
Your body, your choice.
Exactly. That was his message. Your body, your choice.
That's right.
Perfect way
to end it. That is his legacy. So we thank you, George, for all your tunes. Yes. Please write us and let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about incessantly with some manner of ridiculousness that will probably eventually get us sued on this podcast. Our website is offbeattrackscast.com.
Yes, and we are on Twitter at offbeattracks. We love to get talked to.
Yeah, and next week we're going to talk about Canadian disco.
Oh, who loves it? I do.
So we'll see you then. I'm Max.
I'm Danielle.
See ya.